Welcome to episode 91. This episode is sponsored by Shelby Flooring Limited, domestic and commercial flooring experts. For all your flooring needs in Hertfordshire and the surrounding areas, Shelby Flooring Limited specialise in everything from laminate vinyl tiles to carpet and engineer timber flooring, to name but a few. Go to shelbyflooring.co.uk, that's S-H-E-L-B-Y, flooring.co.uk, or call 07706 479 860 now, or whenever you need it. My guest this episode is Hamish Hawke, and apart from having possibly the coolest name of all my guests so far, he was also one of the most easygoing, affable guests I've ever had. We talked about him being compared to ancient Greek playwrights, horoscopes, the pressure of recording new album Angel Numbers, it's really good by the way, and more. On the next episode are Tommy O'Dell and Johnny Took from DMAs talking about their new album, and after the success of my live London show at the Comedy Store in Leicester Square with Garth Marenghi, there is more to come. Firstly, the Harry Peacock Kevin Bishop show on February 1st has had to be delayed for a couple of months, but at the end of February, on the 28th, I host not one but two comedy titans. Diane Morgan, she of Afterlife, Motherland and Philomena Kunk, careful how you say it, and comedy legend Alexi Sale. Tickets are on sale the first week of February, but on sale now is another legend. Brian Blessed is my guest at the Prince Charles Cinema on March 7th. Ticket links for this can be found at realfeedback.co.uk. Please follow me on Twitter at realfeedbackpod, and you can pre-order Hamish Hawke's album Angel Numbers now, and I highly recommend that you do. Or if it's after February 3rd when it's released, you can buy it and have it right there and then. Unless, of course, you order the vinyl, in which case someone has to bring it to you. This isn't an interview, this is a conversation. This is Real Feedback. I just had a panic because I just got an email saying Hamish has joined your Zoom and it hadn't come up here yet.
Right,
that okay. Has happened before. I don't know. I don't. Yeah, some sort of technical hit.
I've been watching you for hours.
So. Yeah, I've seen what you've been doing. Yeah. So how's it going? You got what, 2.5 weeks to go. You must be quite excited now.
Yeah, things are gearing up. Yeah, we've got a rehearsal stint at the end of next week, and this week's been quite promo heavy, but doing things like this, which I enjoy doing, so it has been quite a packed schedule, but thanks for having me.
Well, I want to start by saying what a cool name you've got, because my name is a couple of years ago I had Faris on from the horrors, and I started by saying that he had a really cool name because Kevin Dawson is pretty shit really. But Hamish Hawke, you got the alliteration, and it sounds like a poet sort of name as well, which is quite relevant for you as you know, people talk about your lyrics a lot, and you know, you've, some of the people you've been compared to, playwrights, you know, ancient Greek playwrights, even Euripides.
Yeah, that was something.
Is that weird? I mean, is that lyrically? Is lyrics? Were you writing sort of words before they became songs? Were you always into poetry and things like that?
I would say, well, one of the things actually that made me sort of land so comfortably on songwriting, I always knew that I wanted to do something that involved performance, live performance, and any kind of stage. I always knew that's where I wanted to be. But it's funny, in terms of songwriting, whenever I write phrases down, whenever I sort of capture little sayings and make notes and things, it's always sort of, I don't even need to question it. It always feels like there to be a song. It's not a stanza in a poem. It's not part of a long form piece. It's not prose or anything like that. It's sort of, my default setting is sort of assuming that the things that I write are going to be lyrics and they're going to be sung. So my relationship to what I write always, I don't worry too much if they sound, I don't know if they're not what you would say. It's usually if I would sing it, that's when, but it's I've never been a poet as such. I've always been a songwriter and lyricist, and I must admit I'm most comfortable with that. So when I'm compared to poets, it's obviously very Well, very complimentary indeed, and I'm very flattered by any comparisons of the ones you're talking about to these ancient Greek poets and playwrights. Yeah, I don't really know how to take that at all. But it's, as I say, it's lovely to hear. You know,
lyrically, is there some sort of concept overall to your songwriting in terms of topic? Because the Greek poet thing, obviously, there's not a lot you can compare to living in the 21st century. Yeah. In Scotland to a Greek, or can you? You know, are there sort of similar crossovers in terms of what you're? Because I know that like, he did Medea?
Medea. Well, I would say, I've certainly noticed in the past few years that when I'm writing songs, they after I've written, say, how best to describe it? When I start a sort of fresh batch of songs, I'll maybe have three or four, and I know they're going to be contributing to an album in the future, but I maybe don't have a concept of what that album is going to be at that stage. And then it's usually sort of three or four songs into this new run, this new sort of flow of songs, I will land on a lyric that can not only become the album title, but can become this sort of unifying idea behind a whole collection of songs, a sort of central image, or like a symbolic image, or a sort of organizing principle. And I've lost you.
I'm still here.
Oh, you're still here.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Okay,
maybe I was just sitting very still listening to you. Yeah.
Okay, that's maybe my screen's gone funny, right. There we go. Sort of a few songs in, I'll come up with this idea that will unify all of the songs and unite them under one banner. But I don't have an organizing principle over sort of throughout my entire songwriting life. I would say I do identify somewhat with the kind of Jarvis Cocker sort of Smith's template that is sort of elevating ordinary life, sort of pedestrian life, as it were, and singing about it, the sort of Scott Walker form of singing about it on a sort of elevated plane and singing about very ordinary things, but giving them this grand sort of instilling them with this sense of grandeur. I definitely identify with that to a degree. So I suppose I do identify with that kind of, I suppose it's a new romantic tendency, really. But I don't, if I were to write songs that don't quite conform to that, I don't sort of slap myself on the back of the hand saying, come on, you're digressing. You know, I don't do that. So I wouldn't say I have a sort of unifying principle behind my songwriting. I just go with what comes to me.
Well, I found it really interesting on, is it Do You Know, where for years I was Lennon's Imagine's track three. So I immediately have to go, what was track three? Rather than you just going, I was a jealous guy. And I just loved it. I was like, yeah. Well, you take about the lyric that sometimes becomes the title of the album. Obviously, Angel Numbers is the new album. Mm-hmm. And I looked up what that means. And that's got quite a very interesting thing. Can you explain a bit about what Angel Numbers are?
Well, I'm very new to the idea of it. It was actually, it was a flatmate, an old flatmate of mine, who she introduced me to the concept. And I think I'd been aware of it somewhere. I think I had it in the back of my mind somewhere, but I couldn't have brought the phrase to mind. But it's essentially that as you walk around your life, you might come across certain numbers more than you come across others. And I think the ones that people are generally familiar with are sort of lucky number 13 or unlucky number 13, or 11:11 on a digital clock. Or it's essentially the idea that you come across certain numbers more than others, and whatever that number might be will tell you how you're getting on, essentially, if you're moving in the right direction according to your ultimate fate or your destiny, if you're on the right path or if you've taken a wrong turn. People who are mystically minded, sort of sort of give a lot of meaning to these numbers. I'm, of course, more skeptical myself, though I am intrigued by the idea generally. But that became the central image of the new album. This sort of, it was looking into the future, looking at your own sense of ambition and your own potential and your ideas of success and achievement, and to what extent, moving into the future, you feel like you're on the right foot, or you're wandering off the path. I became quite intrigued by that idea, and it just felt right.
So you say you're skeptical. I mean, I'd side with you on this sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you not someone who would normally get into, I mean, things like the star signs, which is abhorrent to me that anyone would still actually believe that 12 different things could apply to 8 billion people, however many. I've proved it wrong many times by reading someone their star sign, and then they go, "That's so me," and they say, "I was reading a different one." And
then, I was actually reading Aries.
And they'd say, "Oh, that's so Leo of you to do."
Oh God, what a Sagittarius move that was. It's funny. I was talking about this in another interview quite recently. There's a central tension in being a songwriter, or perhaps in being an artist, is that, you know, I'm very much intrigued by these ideas. You know, I don't really pay any mind to what my horoscope means for my life. I don't put any I don't have a dog in that race, essentially. I don't believe in that sort of thing. But, you know, if I do pick up a copy of the Metro, I probably will flick to that page at some point. And I'm generally interested in those sort of colorful corners of human society that I can't even believe that we have horoscopes in the newspaper. It's quite amazing that we do it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that many people, I don't think it would be a majority of people that would say, "Oh, you know, I sort of base my life on what my horoscope says, and I won't make that investment if, you know, my moon isn't in such and such a phase." But I think there's a central tension in that I am really enthralled by these ideas. From a songwriting perspective, I like to bring in things like this into my songwriting, but on a rational level in my day to day, I don't put any stock in it. You know,
well, back in it, because I'm a musician as well, and my old band, we had an album called Alien Nation. It was very much UFO based, and I was heavily into the whole concept of extraterrestrials and fake moon landings and stuff like this. And because I was a massive Pixies fan, and that was their, at the time, their the last thing they'd done was all, it was all headed towards Roswell and things like that. So it's whatever floats your boat, really. So Angel Numbers is produced again by Rod Jones from Idlewild. He's did Heavy Elevator as well. And I read that you said it's the only album you've recorded in the shadow of a vaguely successful record.
Yeah.
So I wonder what effect that had on your writing and how you delivered, how it changed your vocal delivery when actually recording the album.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I've been writing songs for a long time, and Heavy Elevator wasn't my debut album, but it became a debut of sorts. It was sort of the first album I released that garnered a certain kind of listener or a certain kind of reputation. And things have really taken off in a sense over the past year and a half as a result of Heavy Elevator. But it is true. It's the first time, Angel Numbers was the first time I'd ever walked into the studio with a certain pressure or weight of expectation on my shoulders. I'd never, you know, recording sessions are pressure cookers anyway. There's a sense of excitement and enthusiasm, sort of giddiness about them, but there's also a we're only here for a certain amount of time, and we can only do so many we can only do so many takes, you know, we can't just, you know, and that's, I think it's a really important part of the whole experience is the idea of limitation. And, you know, you can't do it for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and, oh, you know, we'll redraft this if it's not right. It's nice to have that pressure, but it was the first time I'd gone into the studio with a pressure from another source, which was this idea of, oh, you know, what if people, you know, we're following up this record that is seemingly quite dear to people and people relate to in a very interesting way, new and unexpected way. How do we live up to that? You know, for the first few days in the studio, I was maybe hyper aware of that, but it does dissipate simply because you've just got to focus on the task at hand and you've got to immerse yourself completely. It's like, recording studios are often like casinos, you know, there's no windows. So you don't know what time of day it is. Right. You just have to be in that moment, be in that world. And it's a very all consuming experience. And so I think as much as there was a certain pressure there, a light pressure, admittedly, but a certain pressure, it disappears after a few days because you don't have time or space to think about anything else than that one take as you're doing it. And I do, the band and I we're very happy with the songs and we think the songs speak for themselves, just as those on Heavy Elevator did. It's a different record. Angel Numbers is a different record to Heavy Elevator. It's sort of softer and more contemplative in parts, I would say. But it's definitely a complementary record. And I've been calling it a sister record to Heavy Elevator. So I'm not too worried about it not connecting with the last one. It feels very much part of the same family.
Well, see, I thought from that quote that it meant you went in with a higher confidence in what you were doing. But it was kind of the opposite initially, this sort of trepidation for it. But I know what you say about the window thing. A recording studio with windows is a bit like going to the cinema and watching the film with the lights on. I recorded in September and no windows. And I knew it was the daytime. Of course I did. But you have to feel like you've completely shut yourself out from the outside world because you can, you know, within 1 minute, you're just, you know, there's a Greggs around the corner, whatever. And that magic bubble was burst. That
I know.
Creative hub has to
There's
be,
always a Greggs. That's yeah. true.
Has to be sealed off from the world, I feel. But well, you say about it being a sister record. What I found interesting was the album covers. The album cover of Heavy Elevator is obviously a front on portrait shot of you. And this is a front on portrait shot of you, but all sort of blurred.
Yeah, so
that was obviously, I'm assuming that was a conscious thing to link the two albums.
Yeah, the decision to have that that initial portrait on the front of Heavy Elevator was essentially I've released music under various names and under various sort of guises, as it were, and worked with different people. And this was the first official collaboration between Andrew Pearson, my guitarist, Stefan Maurice, my drummer, and me. Heavy Elevator was the first time we worked together as a sort of official trio. But it was also the first time where the Hamish Hawk name really solidified itself, which might sound strange, but it's... we had discussions about it and we decided that going forward with Hamish Hawk, this, as you so kindly said, this quite sort of memorable mythological name that just so happens to be my real name. It's done me well.
Yeah.
Heavy Elevator, as I say, wasn't a debut album, but it felt like the most comprehensive artistic statement that I'd ever been involved in. So it felt only fitting for the front cover to be this sort of, it's my face and this is what it is. It was not a rebirth exactly, but, you know, as I say, a statement. And Angel Numbers is a continuation of that statement, but I felt that one of the interesting aspects, to me anyway, of Angel Numbers was how it feels like a cohesive album to me, but it does feel like an album with quite a few faces. And there are new musical palettes that have been introduced to the album that didn't feature on Heavy Elevator. And I think I really like the cover art of Angel Numbers. It was a photograph taken by an Edinburgh-based photographer called Emanuele Cente, and he's got a beautiful eye, and I fell in love with the photo as soon as I saw it, so had to go with that.
Well, let's talk about the songs, because I love the album, and I think it's really interesting you say it's an album with different faces. I think it's the perfect way to put it, because in terms of it being linked to Heavy Elevator, for me, Heavy Elevator was more, because there might be some strings on Heavy Elevator, I don't know, but it's mainly sounds like a band playing, and you could easily take that to the stage and you can make it sound quite similar. But there's a lot more going on Angel Numbers.
Yeah.
From the first track, you know, Once Upon an Acid Glance, which kind of starts with the strings, and it's got this sort of, I love that song because it kind of reminds me of 80s John Hughes, and that's a compliment. I mean, but in a cool Breakfast Club way, it kind of like the lay your hands down on my skin bit, you know, that's the kind of vibe that it was giving me.
I hate
pigeonholing people going, oh, it sounds like this, it sounds like that. But for people who haven't heard the album, you know, I have to kind of paint this idea of what is sonic, you know, audibly it sounds like. But the first three tracks are all these quite big, sort of optimistic, jubilant tracks. But then you've got Bridget St. John, and Frontman then appears, where you actually collaborate with Anna B. Savage?
That's right, yeah.
So what made you decide, there were two tracks, well, there's actually, Bridget St. John has a female backing vocal on it, but there's no featured, you know.
Yes.
But so there are three tracks with female vocals as well. What made you decide to branch out? Was it the song you just thought this is a dual vocal song?
Well, yeah, it was a few things. Yeah, the two notable or most notable sort of backing vocalists, Anna B. Savage on Frontman and Samantha Crane on Rest in Veneers. I will say, I'm so thrilled that they agreed to be involved in the record, because I think the performances on it are just brilliant, and I'm hugely inspired by their own their songwriting, and as I say, I'm just I'm just absolutely psyched that they agreed to be involved. When I wrote Rest in Veneers, I knew that I wanted a call and response vocal, and it just so happened that second verse was perfect for a call and response vocal, and I'd long sort of pictured it that way. So when I approached Sam Crane to do it, I adore her voice and her music generally, and so was really happy she agreed to do it, and I think it's executed perfectly, and it has that kind of new country, almost kind of Laurel Canyon vibe, which, as I say, is a palette that wasn't included in Heavy Elevator at all. So I knew that she had to be on it, and she really evoked that perfectly. Anna B. Savage, similarly, that first that opening verse of Frontman, the band and I all agreed that it would be nice if that was sung in a voice that wasn't my own. I mentioned earlier about the sort of unifying concept behind the album, that was this idea of the future and of potential success and ambition and moving forward. Another unifying concept is the idea of angels, the idea of guardian angels, or people that come into your life either for a moment or for a day or a week or a month or several years, and they have a really profound effect on the direction your life's going in, and they either teach you something or and it could be a positive or a negative experience. But the album came to be a sort of a run of stories that included these people that come into your life, and these chance encounters. And so Anna B. Savage and Sam Crane came to embody these angels, in my mind anyway. And so the album is not only talking about these numbers that you see, these angel numbers, it's also a collection of songs about angels, so Angel Numbers.
Well, it's interesting you say about the positive. I was chatting to a musician friend of mine a couple of weeks ago in the car on the way to a gig, and he said, have you got any regrets? And I was talking about an ex. I said, you know, probably staying with my ex for so long. But then I said, however, had I not, I might not be with who I'm with now and have my children. And it's true that like what you say, positive or negative, it all shapes your path.
Of course, yeah.
I kind of get a bit deep now, but it shapes the path, and it shapes your character, and everything. Not everything happens for a reason, as in there's some mystical force that is shaping it, but just let it happen, and then
it's one of those things, everything has to happen. Mm. Everything, when you're going through it, you can suffer inordinately and feel just awful, and there are certainly such things as regrets. And it's that thing that people say, you don't regret the things you do, you regret the things you don't do. I always remember that for some reason. I'm not actually sure if it's true, but it's I always feel that it's, yeah, things happen and they can be awful.
Well, there's probably a few people in prison that regret what they did.
Yeah, that's true. But they probably, they probably regret not getting away with it.
I regret not running faster.
Exactly. I regret not being better at running away from police. It is that, isn't it? It's just some things happen, but it's just a matter of time before you realize, before your perspective on it changes, and you think, that had to happen, and it taught me that, and without that, I wouldn't be here, and so on. So it's, Angel Numbers, contains all of that, all of those feelings. And as I say, it is more contemplative, it's more ruminative. And it goes back over the past in a way that Heavy Elevator doesn't. I think Heavy Elevator maybe looks at the past with a certain degree of, in places, a certain degree of not hostility, but sort of resignation. And I think Angel Numbers looks at the past with a degree of acceptance and then turns its attention back to the future.
I mean, was part of that because it was written in COVID, in lockdown, was it? Most of the album I read.
Yeah.
So do you think that's because you had more time to think and had more time to reflect? And so that's why that sort of songwriting came out of you, is because you had been more reflective.
Definitely. Definitely. I think, lockdown was a scary time in that when it sort of descended on us, there was a great deal of anxiety and panic for a lot of people, unsurprisingly. And for me, certainly there was this period early on of, certainly worrying that some kind of fatal blow had been dealt to the music industry, the touring industry. I was really worried about what would come to be of that. And then a few weeks in, once the dust had settled somewhat, and once you'd gotten used to spending the past month that you had sitting vaguely still indoors, then I found myself being quite productive or creatively inclined, which was a surprise to me, because I don't tend to, I certainly didn't think I thrived under any kind of anxious conditions. But as I say, the dust settled and suddenly I felt the need to write songs. But they were, as you say, they were from a perspective of sitting quite still, looking forward to when things would open up again and how you were using this time to assess and reevaluate your life so that when the doors opened again, things could be reconfigured and you could set off in the direction that you wanted to go. And I think, that's very much the focus of the album, or rather the sort of heart of the album, is that feeling of, okay, can't quite go anywhere just now, but I will sort of, for better or for worse, go over the past to a degree, and I'll sort of collate all of the lessons that I've learned from that. Where has that brought me, and where is that going to take me next? I would say that's, Angel Numbers is most certainly a product of lockdown in that sense.
And what about recording? So obviously there's a lot going on in some of these songs with the strings section and everything. I think you recorded in 2 weeks, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
You mentioned earlier about having that sort of limitation, which I wholeheartedly agree with, because years ago I talked about to someone who worked in film that, you get the Michael Bay who's got endless pots of cash and delivers, What could we say to me? And then you've got someone who's got a £1 million budget and makes the best independent film you've seen that year. And,
of course.
2 weeks to shoot it or whatever. So, but when you listen to this record, you think, how did you do that? Because there's so much going on. So obviously, you were very prepared going in, I assume. And I don't, could you talk a bit about the string side of things? And were they in with you? Was that a separate session?
No, that it was, an entirely separate session. The strings and the pedal steel and the horns as well. There's brass on this album, which there hasn't been on my previous records. It's you'd be surprised. You know, things really do come. I mean, you know, we'll maybe go into the studio with an idea of where each of the songs is going to go. But that's certainly what we don't have is that much control. You know, sometimes a song will sort of dictate to you what it needs, you know, and you might throw the kitchen sink at it and it just doesn't sit right. And maybe, you'll sit there puzzled for some time thinking, what is that missing ingredient that will only reveal itself down the line? It's, I would say, actually, one of the things that we've come to know of our recording sessions is that kind of unpredictable nature of where things will end up, and how some songs that you think will be small moments on the album become huge songs or become singles even, and then others that you think are going to be these sort of behemoths on the album end up being quite a sort of, you know, just a fleeting moment. And I love that. I would say that the stage of recording that, or at least for these last couple of records, the stage of recording that we've had least of, or has been the shortest stage, is this, what you call like pre-production. So the idea of, you know, really going over the demos over and over and over again, playing them a lot, recording bits of them, seeing exactly what kind of animal they are. That's been the shortest stage. And I think moving forward, it's something that I would like to spend more time on, because it's always nice to feel that you know, songs teach you a lot as you're writing them, as you're recording them, as you're demoing them. They change and they teach the person who wrote them what they really are and what they mean and what they're trying to do and what you need to do to allow them to speak their message, essentially. And I would like to, in the future, spend more time getting to know the ins and outs of the songs before we go into the studio. But it's often just the way it is. You book the recording time, and you have to stick to it, and you just have to do what you can. But I do also like that flying by the seat of my pants feeling as well. that's thrilling as well.
I like that you talk about a song as if it's a living entity. It's really interesting that it becomes, you know, you're kind of like the vessel through which this song has appeared, and then it kind of evolves into this its own thing. So that's really interesting that you see it that way.
It's funny what we were saying earlier about angel numbers and being skeptically minded, but there's also a part of it that's quite intriguing in a way, and you don't necessarily put stock into it, but you're interested in the sort of that world in a way, or curious about it, or at least I am in when it comes to that kind of thing. When I was talking about that central tension of writing songs, is that sometimes you do feel like you're an antenna that just picks up a signal, and you write a song and it's done and it's there in front of you on the paper, and you think, where did that come from? I half an hour ago, I couldn't have conceived of writing that song. I had absolutely no idea that that's what was going to be written. And so I'm not sure, I don't know about living entities, but they certainly, they have their own their own agenda, you know. So
is that how they come to you then? It just appears in your head? Is it melody? And for me, it's like I'm thinking of a song I've heard on the radio. it's like that, as in, you know, you get an earworm.
Yeah.
But I think,
well, yeah.
I think that's not an existing song.
Yeah.
I get the phone out and I hum it down. Or if I'm at home, I get the guitar.
Yeah.
So,
well, for me, I would say it's lyrics first, principally.
Really?
But exactly that feeling, wow, of sometimes you'll get a melody in your head and you'll go, oh, I'm pretty sure that's a song. Then you realize that you've made it up, you know, that, or, you know, you might have taken something unconsciously, subconsciously,
yeah,
from somewhere else.
And, done that a few times.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, that could be a dangerous game. But I've written lots of different kinds of songs, and sometimes I've slaved away at them and sat down at the desk and, you know, with the blank sheet of paper and the pen, and I really work at it and treat it like a 9-to-5 shift. And then other times I will be doing something else. I'll be completely preoccupied with something else. And, you know, like lightning out of nowhere, it just strikes. And wherever I'm going, if I'm on, you know, walking to somewhere, or, you know, sleeping, or, socializing, or something, I'll have to sort of go with that flow in a way. I'll have to make the notes and write. So yeah, it's anyone's guess. Sometimes you can really work at it and get something. Sometimes you can really work at it and get nothing. Sometimes it just happens to you.
And that's interesting, because a lot of the people I speak to, it's either or. They can either sit down with a blank sheet and write, or they just, it just comes to them, and then they sort of, you know, work from that.
Yeah.
From that seed.
I think it's like Neil Young said, you know, don't try to write, you know, never sit down and try to write. If there's nothing coming, if there's nothing that you know that you must write about in that moment, don't even pick up pen and paper. And, you know, as much as I do have that feeling sometimes it is possible for me to you know, maybe I need a starting point. Maybe I need a kernel, a little fragment or a phrase. And from that I can springboard. But certainly, right, sometimes it's absolutely no use to just don't bother, because you're dry, you know.
Well, it's easy for Neil Young to say it, because he's Neil Young.
Exactly. Yeah,
there's a reason why he's Neil Young, because he's
sitting on his mountains of song. Don't try. Yeah. Don't bother. Yeah. You know?
It just comes to you. You know.
Yeah, it just comes to you.
Like I did with John Lennon, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Thanks, Neil.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah. So coming up, obviously you got the album out on the 3rd of February, and then a tour very soon after, or was it already started by that point? So how do you transcribe the songs from the album onto the stage now? Have you got the strings on the keys, or have you got actual strings, or is it a bit of a surprise?
Well, it is a bit of a surprise, but we do use samples here and there. We do like to have the vast majority of the song being played live. We only like to use backing tracks and things very, very minimally. But no, we don't have any, we don't have a string quartet or a horn section or anything like that. It is just the five of us on stage. And, you know, I would say all of the songs, as much as they have their, you know, they have their template there from the record, they do morph into something else live. And we do play around with them a little bit, just to give them a bit more kind of, I don't know what you would call it, a certain energy or a certain impetus live. The songs can change quite a lot. But, it's all down to next week, really. We're going into the rehearsal space next week a fair bit, and hashing it all out. And, you know, obviously we're very familiar with a lot of Heavy Elevator songs, but these are going to be the Angel Numbers rehearsals. And I'm very excited, but who knows?
And then you've got to pick the set list as well.
I know. Well,
I know what you mean. You just want to play all the new ones. Just want to play.
Yeah, well, it's true. It's true. But we're sort of well on the way with crafting the set, or the songs we want to play at least. But, you know, it might well throw a spanner in the works. Sometimes you'll try a song and it's just, oh, you know, that's not going to work live at all. But other times, the exact opposite happens and they can really surprise you.
Well, I wish you all the very best because it is a really great album.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
And yeah, I'm going to say thank you, Hamish Hawke, because it's the first time I've said someone's full name because it deserves to be the full name. But
thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on today, Hamish.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks.
Wedding dress, divorce papers, and visions of your death. Let's nest in an eggshell. Darling, my mind's on a living edge. I've been known to backtrack. I've been known to sleepwalk over firing ranges. Spent or overflown, hellbent, fawn on the phone, perfect cadence. Let's put this kid to bed. I'm fainting in an empty home, strained under the debts I owe. They say the magic word is mortgage. Imagine, let's sign a Latin life and death pledge. Am I unqualified to be so dignified? Seemingly some of the time I lie for fun. Will I be cast aside? Mama be mystified. I wish I could say to me it matters none. Who's game for a game of heaven and hell? Jesus and the Jezebel, dying daffodils, engraven images. I've been known to backtrack. I've been known to sleep talk. Would you prefer to be hunted? Would you prefer to think of me as prey? What of the suicides? What of the childless brides? What of the undecided sons? The ties they bind, the times they tried. Well, all the dusting gets done. Life is for dying. Are you with your salt? Dad's tears falling in the single malt. Life is for dying. Are you with your salt? Are we doomed if we're digging? Are we doomed by default?